Welcome to the Future of Teamwork podcast, where we explore cutting-edge strategies to keep teams human-centered, drive innovation, and empower you with the tools and insights needed to help your team excel and thrive in today's changing world. Your host is Dane Grunewald, a seasoned expert with over 20 years of experience enhancing team dynamics and innovation. Today, Dane is joined by Andrea Wannerstrand. Andrea is a leadership strategist, executive coach, and cultural transformation expert with over 25 years inside some of the world's most complex organizations, including Meta, Microsoft, and T-Mobile. As the founder and CEO of A3 Culture Lab, Andrea helps leaders make bold shifts from control to connection, performance to presence, and burnout to bold cultural influence. In this episode, you'll hear how leaders can do meaningful work without burning themselves or their teams out. They'll explore three practical ideas that shape how leaders show up and how teams function. First, the three brains, gut, heart, and thinking brain, and how paying attention to all three changes the way leaders prepare for conversations, make decisions, and navigate tension. Second, the Maven mentality, a simple framework for building awareness, managing energy, and showing up with intention in moments that matter. And finally, the A3 method, authenticity, autonomy, and accountability, and how these conditions create trust, ownership, and sustainable performance across teams. Along the way, Andrea shares how these ideas show up in real leadership moments, delivering hard feedback, managing energy in hybrid work, creating clarity without micromanaging, and helping teams stay connected in uncertain conditions. So, teamwork makes the dream work, and we're here to inspire your next collaborative breakthrough. Gather your teams or put on your headphones, and let's dive in together.
Welcome to the Future of Teamwork podcast. My name is Dane Grunewald, and today I'm joined by Andrea Wannerstrand. Andrea has a bunch of titles, coach, author, speaker, founder and CEO of A3 Culture Lab, and one that I find fascinating is Lavender Farm Owner. So she's keeping busy in a lot of good things, but we're going to talk particularly today around human energy and mastering success without burnout, amongst other things. So, Andrea, welcome to the show.
It's great to be here, Dane. Thank you.
You're welcome. So tell us a little bit more about how you came to be doing all of this impactful work.
Yeah, you started off with a whole list of titles, and I just generally embrace one these days, which is I'm me. And then the second one is I'm an entrepreneur living a portfolio life. But I really started doing this human-centric work when I had a huge career shift. I was in IT program management for about 18 years in telecommunications. And during my tenure at T-Mobile, I was doing lots of big ERP implementations, big software and systems databases for HR. And the VP of HR brought me aside one day and she said, I got to talk to you. And I was like, oh, stakeholder wants to talk to you. That's never good. And she said, look, I've just noticed that your eyes roll over when you're talking bug reports. She goes, don't worry, nobody else is seeing it, but I'm just watching that you glaze over, but you really light up when we talk about the people position and the things like succession planning and performance. And I'd really like to bring you onto my team. And she took a chance on me and I said a wild yes and took a career curve and started working as her director of org effectiveness. Wow. Which then led to a lot of imposter syndrome that lasted me over the years. I did a stint of burnout at one point, trying to be always on and moving it forward. And that all fostered my desire to really click into human centricity and how do we have the mindset to do so in a way that is healthy and creates community.
Brilliant. I love the way you talk about creating community too. I've got this growing belief, and I'm seeing more and more evidence of it, that if organizations do a good job of caring for their people, then those people go home and do a better job of caring for their communities, and you create a lot more connection through that local ecosystem. So I think that's very encouraging, particularly in the world that we're living in today.
Absolutely. And we as humans Right. The energy that we carry, it's meant to connect with others. And so when we isolate ourselves or solely on only for our work environment, we're doing a disservice to ourselves and those around us.
Absolutely. Yeah, I know we talk about the multiplier effect in economics. You know, for every dollar that you put into a community, it gets spent more than once in local businesses. And I think the same is true with what you're sharing there, which is that as humans, particularly in this kind of remote hybrid world, that globalized world that we're living in, it's still really important that we're going out and we're trading that energy, because it gets retraded and it actually creates a bigger level of impact, I think, positive impact.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I'd myth bust that it has to be in person. Even
interesting
connecting like this, we can have heartfelt conversations. And, you know, our heart is one of our three brains, and it actually has an energy field around it that can be measured, and it sends more messages to our thinking brain. And it's through our expression, it's through our verbal, our nonverbal, and just simply taking the time and being present for that other person.
I'm glad you challenged that, Andrea, because we've had a number of guests that talk to the fact that, you know, the chemicals, the chemistry that switches on, the oxytocin, for example, when we have a human-to-human connection in the real world, is hard to replicate virtually. So, you know, putting that chemistry argument aside, let's talk to this structure. I think that ties into your mindset maven approach, you know, the three brains. I'd love to hear more about that.
Sure. Don't get me wrong. We can get our greatest amount of oxytocin and connecting with people in the real world, and we shouldn't lose that at all. That said, you can still have relationship. You can still connect. You can still have hard conversations that land through being in care, and I often say in being kind with the other person. And I differentiate that from nice in the aspect that nice is generally about us. We're in protective mode and we're gonna like avoid the elephant in the room. But kind steps in with courage, and that's where you really need the right mindset to do that with bravery. And this is where I came up with the Mindset Maven methodology. And this is really looking at that mind-body connection, because as I mentioned, and you pointed out, we have three brains. We have our gut brain, our heart brain, and our thinking brain. And there's neurons across all three of them, and they're sending messages along our nervous system. And often our gut brain and our heart brain are sending messages before our thinking brains even caught them. And this is where you can see excitement or tension. It's the body flags, if you will, that occur for us and for those that are observing us. So the Maven part of Mindset Maven, and I chose that word in particular because a maven is somebody that takes what they've learned and they make it usable for others. They are an expert, but they actually are teaching and guiding, and they need to guide themselves first and foremost. But the maven also stands for mindfulness, awareness, visualization, energy management, and navigation. And it's allowing us to be able to have the right mindset, both in a physical sense as well as in a cognitive sense, in order for us to show up the way we want to in the world.
Oh, I love that. And I love acronyms for reminding myself of some of these elements. So let's go back before we dive into the Maven analogy. Let's go back to heart, gut, and thinking brains. Tell me a little bit more about how a leader can activate those brains for themselves and for their teams.
Absolutely. So your gut is really what's known for, what the science is telling us, is really the intuition center. And we hear things like go with your gut, et cetera, but it's your sensory. Your heart brain is really processing emotion and connection. That's where we have our energy field from our heart. And that's where you hear things like heartfelt. And our emotions are primarily based in our experiences in the past.
Yeah.
Right. And they'll come forth. And a lot of folks are like, oh, there's no emotions at work. Well, your nervous system and your gut brain and your heart brain never got that memo.
Yes.
And you do have emotions. And it's part of why we can't separate work from personal, because it's all personal. It's all about you at the end of the day. So activating our gut and listening to it is listening to our body signals. Do we feel tense? And can we get really curious about that tension as to what's going on? Can we understand where our emotions are taking us? And do we feel anxious about a situation, or do we feel excited about it? Emotions are not just the bad stuff. It's also the energy of a good belly laugh. You
yes.
can't stop it. So how do you listen to yourself first and foremost, and look at those clues that your ecosystem of your nervous system is giving you? And I often tell a leader, the simplest thing you can do is pause before you go into an interaction, whether that's online or in person or at an all hands, and think about, how do I want people to feel at the end of the discussion? And it's not all about making them feel good. Maybe that you need to deliver something that's hard, but do you want them to have clarity? Do you want them to feel actionable? Do you want them to feel heard? Because they're going to remember how you made them feel before they remember what you said.
Yeah.
And get curious about any resistance you have to that and stay curious in the discussion.
Oh, I love that. So resistance, how might that resistance show up? If I'm thinking, hey, I want people to feel seen and valued, that they're working hard, but I also want them to hear that we need to do a better job with our customer outreach in the next quarter because sales is down. Like if I'm coming at it with that message, where might I start to experience that kind of resistance?
You could have tension in your jaw, tension in your shoulders. You might have that voice in your head going, I really don't want to go do this right now.
Yeah.
And so how do you take all of those signals, as I call them, and just get curious about it and set your intention? When we set an intention, it's like pushing the programming for the rest of the ecosystem going, yes, we might be apprehensive about this. Yes, I don't want to deliver a hard message, but I really do care about them and the organization. And
yes.
that's what I want to bring forth. So it's that self-talk that we can do, that self-coaching.
Yep.
That allows us to show up authentically and with some consistency so that people believe that we actually have their best interest at heart and they take the information in, even if it is something to celebrate or it's something that they really don't want to hear, but at least they feel like they're supported moving it forward.
Yeah, I love that. Very neat. So that power of pause is powerful in terms of checking in with the gut. But also, is it all three brains?
It's all three brains.
All three
it's really about, what am I feeling in this situation here? That intuition, that trust. Do I trust myself to show up the way I need to? Do I trust that they might receive
yeah.
this in the way I intend? Your heart is really processing that emotion and that connection, and you ground yourself in the, I've got to do the right thing for the team. I've got to do the right thing for this individual. And I'm going to do it in a way that moves things forward rather than perhaps blame or belittling that can happen when we're like giving somebody a review on what they've done well and what they haven't done well.
Yes.
And then you're setting that intention into your thinking brain so that your thinking brain knows what it's going to do next. Because we think about 90% of our thoughts are the same today that they're going to be tomorrow. And until we do this intentional alignment of, how do I want to show up? How do I want to make them feel? How
yep.
am I going to go about doing this? And we can do this in moments. It doesn't have to be over analysis paralysis and getting us there. You're aligning yourself so that you can actually step into that moment. And the biggest thing is you reflect afterwards, did I do what I intended? And if not, how do I course correct next time? Because we're not perfect, but it's making progress over that, waiting for that perfection.
I love that. That raises so many questions, Andrea, as far as like, you know, Brené Brown talks a lot to vulnerability. So if you're going in to do one of these presentations and you get curious about your resistance and you set the intention, hey, I need to be very clear with my team, does that invite the opportunity for us to be vulnerable? Hey, you know, an example might be, team, you know, we're doing really good work here and here, but I've got concerns and challenges that we're not building enough clarity around our sales cycle, just staying with that example.
And what I love about Brené is she's also, it's not about sharing everything being vulnerable.
Yes.
I think we confuse that we have to like completely make ourselves raw in being vulnerable or act like we're being vulnerable. I think she says no faux crying is allowed.
Yes.
It's taking off our mask. Because if you're trying to fake it till you make it, you're going to fail at some point. Guaranteed. I'm not a betting woman, but I would bet it at the books at Vegas that you're going to fail at some point. And the hardest thing you can do is get back trust when that mask has fallen.
Yeah.
So when you can show up authentically in being vulnerable and in doing exactly in the way that you just stated that day, it's not oversharing, but it's honest. It's truthful. It's sharing your concern, but it's also where you go with that conversation is really leaning into your commitment to making it better.
Yes. Yes. I like that. So tying into the commitment, which is the intention there too. That's a really neat framework. And so where else do you see the three brains showing up? That's a good example of going into an address, but does it show up in, you know, our written work, our planning, you know, other areas that you can use it as a gauge?
It shows up anytime we interact with someone else, no matter what the medium that we are putting forth. Because our fears are based in what's happened in the past and what we're afraid of will happen tomorrow.
Yes.
If we're navigating with that part of us, and I believe we show multiplicity. Part of me wants to do this. Part of me wants to do that.
Yeah.
And you have to be intentional of which part of you is writing this and how do you want to be impacting those around you, what energy you're bringing forward. So you have to be intentional if you're sending an email, if you're sending a text.
Yeah.
We say don't put it in all caps because you're yelling. Even if you want to yell, don't yell.
Yes.
Right? So you really have to be intentional in how you're showing up. And this includes, you might have come out of a very tension-filled situation. I don't know, your tire blew on the way to work, or you had a fight with your partner about something, or your child didn't want to get on the bus, and you come into work or the work environment, and you're full of tension. You're full of, you know, you haven't shaken that stuff off yet. We as humans, we fill in the blanks. Oh,
yes.
Dave must not be happy with me today. He didn't like that report I sent him last night. It's going to be horrible. And it has nothing to do with them.
Yes.
So we can actually, not even just what we say verbally, we can bring our energy in that actually will cascade down, especially if you're in leadership in an organization that has nothing to do with them because they want to fill in the blanks and you're not oversharing. You're not saying, my kid just wouldn't cooperate this morning. Maybe you are, maybe you're not on the relationship side, but we as humans are going to fill in those blanks. And it can be as simple as you have a strange look on your face that you don't normally have, that inconsistency. And folks will often jump into assumption and make it about us rather than what's really going on.
Yeah, that's so true. We had when I was part of a Vistage group, we had a great speaker come in a few times, Michael Aloso, and I think he'd actually come out of directing plays. So he'd worked a lot on stage. And so he would coach leaders on, you know, mindset practices and then behaviors. He was like, the moment you walk into that room, everyone's eyes are on you. You don't have to speak to them. They're going to make assumptions and draw their own conclusions about where you're at and where that might therefore position them in whatever interactions they're having with you or the business. So he always explained the need to kind of like bookend the days, make sure that we were creating that mindfulness before we walked into the office or before we walked into the home at the end of the day. So, you know, those transitions were really important. I always found that very valuable.
Yeah. And what we're doing through this process as we get curious is just creating an awareness of our emotional triggers for ourselves.
Yeah.
And how that actually shows up visibly or just even being heard by the others around us. And this unlocks choice for us.
Yes.
Doesn't mean you're never going to do it again. You're just going to catch yourself faster the next time you let that emotion come out in a way that is not regulated, because that choice is powerful for us. Without awareness, you're trapped. But every new awareness that you have, you can shift. And
yeah.
I often say awareness is a journey, as is confidence. Mm-hmm. The only thing that you can really conquer and say I'm confident in is I'm confident that I will be able to navigate whatever else comes my way. And that's that navigation part of my Mindset Maven method is this ability for us to deal with ambiguity.
Yes.
And still be somewhat even keeled with it rather than letting it spin us out of control.
Which I think in today's world with all of the anxiety and social challenges and technological sort of downpour that we're in, dealing with ambiguity is kind of a pay-to-play kind of, you need to have it.
We like certainty as humans, and yeah. Life by definition is uncertain.
Yeah. Yeah, it very much is. So we've touched on a few of those points then. So mindfulness and awareness, if I'm hearing that right, Andrea, it's about how you're coming in to the moment, whether that's email or in person. And you mentioned about navigating ambiguity. The two that we probably haven't touched on is the visualization and the energy management. So could you expand on those a little bit?
So when we're setting our intention, the method that I like to recommend is visualization. And it isn't fluff. It's actually neuroscience. Your brain doesn't fully distinguish between what you vividly imagine and what you actually experience. And this is why elite athletes program their minds and rehearse in their minds every move they're going to make.
Yeah.
And before they ever step onto the field, climb the mountain, whatever their sport is. And for us, it's about seeing the conversation and the strategy and the future you want to create and training your brain to believe it's possible. And again, this is our thinking brain as well as our heart and gut brain. This is training our ecosystem, rewriting some of our memories and learning from that. So that's where Carol Dweck's growth mindset comes in understanding that we can learn from our past mistakes and actually not have to think the same 90% of the thoughts that we had today again tomorrow.
Yes.
Because if you can see it, you can start stepping into it. And that comes down with the tool of visualization.
Do you have a preference of how you visualize?
For me, I combined it in my mindfulness practice of meditation. And I often teach meditation to my students and to my clients. So it really is setting that intention. And it doesn't have to be, again, a drawn out process.
Yeah,
this is what I think it's going to look like. And this is what I would like it to look like. And it doesn't always go perfectly to plan. Life really does. It rarely ever does. But when we're able to visualize that, we can actually then enable it to actually happen.
Yes.
Deal with our doubt. Our doubt is a constant presence for us. And it's that confidence that I'll be able to get to what I'm visualizing. So combining that again with that mindfulness awareness, and then the visualization comes next. And then the E for energy management. It's a little bit of what I talked about, knowing what energy you're going to bring into the room. So how do you reset it? And it can be as simple as standing up and taking a big breath. I actually did this with an executive client yesterday, and they've been going nonstop and taken on another role, and they hadn't really slept. And I just had them pause and I go, stand up for me.
Yeah.
Take a big breath in. Kind of shake your limbs a little bit. How's that feel? And they go, oh, I'm feeling better. And this is where we can take a clue from Mother Nature, if you will, and look at what canines do.
Yeah.
Canines literally shake it off and they are resetting their nervous system.
Yeah.
So we as humans can simply take a breath. And when we do it with intention, our nervous system, our vagus nerve is, you know, really managing all of these physicalities, our breathing, our mobility. And so when we can get that down to the bottom of our gut, the breath, and bring that forward, we can actually just pivot for a moment and build up that energy again.
Yeah.
But we can also look at other ways to build up energy, getting great sleep and making sure that you get some deep sleep. So I'm a big fan of an Oura ring. It tells me how much deep sleep I got. There's many tools out there. I like data.
Yeah.
That's good data for me. There's also the meditation. There's many different kinds. I thought I couldn't meditate for years. I found several that have worked for me. And it is the closest, is what science has shown us, for us to get re-energized, that we can do in unconsciousness in our sleep while we're conscious.
Yes.
So that energy management and refueling our batteries. The other tip that I have is monitor your energy drains and what energizes you up.
Yeah.
And so I have my clients often keep an energy log, and they're like, what is that, Andrea? And what it really is what are things that light you up during the day, get you into flow state, things that, you know, others might say that's work, but you're like, oh, I love researching this. And you can actually go and go and go.
Yeah.
The other thing is, you see an email come in from somebody and you're like, oh, that energy is coming out of you and it's not a good energy. It's draining you before you've even read the email because you're walking in with some past experience or assumptions. They're going to open that up. They're complaining again. I don't want to hear the complaining and we procrastinate, whatever that might be.
Yeah.
But that energy drain and knowing when we are in our own circadian rhythms, really at our optimum energy, and planning as much as we can. So tactical calendar management can be part of energy management as well.
Oh, absolutely. I'm a big believer in that. I'm definitely more of a morning person, so I need to put my big stuff up front because end of the day, I'm not going to show up very well. And it tends to be best delivered if I've woken up, had a sauna, gone for a surf, and then I come in and I can just hit it. I'm very energized at that point in time. If I've woken up and not done any exercise and then come and sat in 3 hours of budget planning meetings and then I walk into an afternoon tough conversation, I'm not showing up as my best self by any means.
For both you and that other person.
Correct. Yeah. Or the team if it's a wider format meeting. Absolutely. No, I love that. And the energy drains are an interesting one that you touch on, but I like the fact that you reference what I heard there, Andrea, is that there might be certain types of work that you do that are energizing. One question I've got for you on that, in this age of AI, there's a lot of talk around, well, we're going to use AI to get rid of the drudgery of work. But I've read a few articles that say, actually, some people need routine task work, whether that's going through an Excel spreadsheet or going through a checklist of things, because that can actually be energy restoring for them. They can't be always on, you know, in a meeting or in an ideation session. So do you have a view on, you know, how we design work or how we create agency for team members to kind of pick their flavor of, you know, energy restoring work and kind of feed that into their days?
Just like our fingerprints, we're all unique.
Yeah.
And the experiences that we have had in life and our preferences. So you having self-awareness of what your own energy cycles are and where you draw energy is very important. And it's always been important. There's been people that like repetitive tasks. They're very data centric, or they're very engineering oriented, and they would never find themselves in a sales role. Then you have people that are very socially interactive and get energy from that. And they're maybe in sales marketing. They have public, you know, speaking engagements, whatever that might be. And finding your unique blueprint is the best thing that you can do. And then you seek careers that do that. Now, AI taking care of things and that can be done that some people might consider drudgery. There might be other people that really like the thought process or still benefit from that.
Yeah.
So I don't think anything will be completely eliminated. It doesn't mean we can't still do some of what some people might consider drudgery. Other people would think, oh, that's energizing. I feel like I've gotten something done, especially with so much ambiguity. You can like go out and do the drudgery or the systematic steps. And then afterwards, you see how many steps you made and it's accomplished.
Yeah.
So here on our lavender farm, I love the tractor on the field because not in the lavender field, but we have some wheat fields and I'm able to go out and take it all down and it looks Brilliant. Completely different 3 hours later. That to me, folks would go, oh, you could automate that or you could like delegate that out. And I'm like, no, I have fun driving the tractor. And B, I have this sense of accomplishment. It went from point A to point B and I did it.
I think that's really important, particularly for knowledge work, because I've got a few friends that subscribe to the belief that, hey, if my time's worth $200 an hour and I can pay someone $100 an hour to come and do these tasks around my house, I should. There's labor arbitrage there. Where on the flip side, I've got a number of friends who will be like, no, I need to do that work. It doesn't matter that my time's worth more money. It's the what is the utilitarian benefit of me spending time doing something with my hands and seeing the product of my work, because I don't get that Monday to Friday. So it's really interesting how people, I guess, find those energy drivers, not just in the flow of their work, but in the flow of their, you know, their wider week or month, depending on seasonality and when tasks show up.
And I'm all for scalability and delegation. You will not find me doing every task on our property. And so I choose those that give me the gratification and the energy boost that I need. And I delegate out the rest. So same in my business and same in the portfolio of things that I do in my life. But I intentionally got and said, what gives me energy and what doesn't? You will not see me happily weeding at any point ever.
No, me neither. That's not one of my favorites. Okay, so this has been a great kind of walkthrough of the Maven, the Mindset Maven methodology. One question that I've got before we move on is, when you've got the team, you mentioned the engineers and the salespeople. So you've got that engineer that loves to stay up late at night, you know, energy fueled, coding, doing their best work. And then you've got the sales team that wants to really get going on in the morning with lots of calls and things. What happens when you need to bring that team together and you know, maybe it's the middle of the day, neither of them are at their best. Like, how do you create space and awareness for that intact team or that project team to kind of come in and land and be productive?
So there's the realities. We can't, even when you work for yourself, or certainly when you work in a company who is accountable to the stakeholders and shareholders, excuse me, at the end of the day, we can't pick just the optimum time that we're going to be there. So this is where, no matter what level in an organization you are, setting and understanding how your energy shows up in the room, how you're actually going to interplay in that moment in that room is metaphorical. It could be on that email thread, the Teams or Slack channel threads. It could be in the presentation that you're giving or the one-on-one you're having with a strategic partner in the organization.
Yeah.
We can't always choose to be working exactly when we are at optimal. That just is not life. But we can choose what energy we're going to spend, how we're going to respond rather than react, and what options we're going to take. We're at choice.
Yeah. In a meeting, might it be possible, or have you seen it, Andrea, where you can kind of come in and say, here as an icebreaker, what are your intentions on showing up in this room and into this meeting right now? Do you ever kind of get people to bring out and reinforce maybe their prep before they walked in so that it's known to others, or you know, how might that land?
I haven't done it exactly that way. I have worked with leaders that we kind of flip the script versus when they'd come in and say, here's what's on my mind today.
Yeah.
They've come in and asked the meta question or the Facebook question of what's on your mind.
Yeah.
And look that around. A good friend of mine who wrote a fantastic book called The Coaching Habit, Michael Bungay Stanier.
Yes.
Who I've done work with over the years, both for his company and used him at Microsoft, his work, The Coaching Habit, starts with the curiosity of what's on your mind.
Yeah.
So you don't necessarily have to go to what was your prep today and what's your intention to come in, but getting curious in the essence of, we come together today, we have a joint agenda. Where's everybody at on this joint agenda and moving it forward?
It's a little more organic. Now, I like your way.
Yeah, I think going a little more organic, but now I'm curious. I want to try it your way as well.
Well, we get to experiment. We'll compare notes.
There we go.
Neat. All right. Well, I'd love to come back to the A3 philosophy then. So maybe you can walk me through that.
Sure. We've talked about authenticity and really having the mindset maven, you know, grounding for yourself allows you to be more authentic in the workplace. And we talked about how folks will understand or not understand as much when you've been wearing a mask and things fall down. So
Yeah. You
really want to be authentic. And the key to authenticity is being consistent. And Yes. You don't want to be the bad boss that has been played in American movies for years, where like folks text each other and that they're coming up in the elevator and everybody pretends to do everything that the boss expects to do.
Yeah.
That is consistency, but it's not consistency in a human-centric way that's actually going to foster innovation, because when we're all frightened that way, we can't get that way. So authenticity is really showing up consistently with human centricity and being kind, which includes being courageous in your feedback and your viewpoint. The autonomy is important for anyone to scale in today's environment, and that creates a foundation of trust and needs a foundation of trust in order to occur. But autonomy is not abandonment. It's not, here you go, Dane, this is yours, go with it. It's a form of support, and it's a lever to create accountability, which we'll get to in a moment. But autonomy only works if there's clear expectations. The aspect of clarity, it's not always what you say, it's what they actually hear. And if you say things and they haven't heard what your true expectations are, you're not going to get what you asked for. So you have to do a form of validation and creating a plan that is their plan on how are you going to move this forward? When are we going to check in next?
Yeah.
Validating that they've understood their responsibilities and the expectations, which makes it easier for accountability to be had. Accountability actually should be something that you're celebrating. They're the owner of it. They're driving it forward. Accountability often gets used in business as that dreaded performance review.
Yes.
Or the, you did it wrong. It's, you know, the one butt to kick, if you will. And it's really about ownership. And when they are clear on expectations, bought in on their role, the accountability just naturally comes.
Yeah.
And it becomes this endless loop. And they're showing up authentic and they're creating autonomy for their colleagues around them. So this is not just in a leadership dynamic. When you can have an A3 culture of authenticity, autonomy, and folks owning their work, and the accountability for candid conversations of what's working, what's not working, how we're going to move this forward.
Yep.
And everyone feels heard, both you as the leader setting the expectations and the individuals. Doesn't mean you're always agreeing, but you Correct. Feel heard. You can create a culture that's innovative and performing because the micro stresses and the tension of a culture goes down when we stay authentic and when we're autonomous and we don't think we're going to get beaten up for a form of failure.
I love the the infinity loop that this creates, and I'm particularly appreciating as we talk it through, Andrea, how the mindset maven methodology helps us as leaders work out how we're going to show up, and then the A3 philosophy helps us kind of activate the wider team. It reminds me of a number of conversations I've had with my dad over the years. One of the ones that he would always share in leading teams was that there's a very fine line between delegation and abdication. And his whole thing was, if you don't create that clarity for your team member to go out and have autonomy in how they do the task, then you've essentially abdicated all responsibility in the breakdowns with you. And I always felt that was a really powerful statement that so many leaders get wrong. Like delegation, even today, is one of my constant work-ons in business. So it's neat the way that you've kind of weaved those three together and have created that continuity.
Yeah, I have had the pleasure of seeing the good, the bad, and the ugly, and being in the midst of it at some point of my career as well. I have not always been good at these things. And it's this aspect of continuous learning and trying to move it forward. One of the number one things I have them hear with a client before they're really embracing how to create autonomy is, well, I told them, yeah, but did they hear what you said?
Yeah.
And well, I told them and I put it in writing. And it's like, again, did they hear what you said? How do you know that? And what's your validation process? And then they're like, well, I'll just ask them to repeat what I said. And I go, no, that again does not ensure that they've heard what you want them to do. So how do you get curious and co-create with them what this plan is going to look like? And the folks that struggle with this the most, that have moved from an individual contributor who executes into a people manager, or a people manager who becomes a manager of people managers, you're getting work done through others rather than execution. And so you need to validate that the expectations have been comprehended, and yet the resistance you might have for yourself of, I want them to do it the exact way I would do it.
Yeah.
Because what if they come up with a better way to do it? It might be different, or it gets the same result. And how do you hold them accountable? So it's a letting go process.
Yep.
As we move it forward, and it's not an abdicating in that letting go, to your point.
Yeah, I love that. And there's something also, Ian McDonald, who I do a lot of work with, who wrote a book on systems leadership theory, said, if you give an individual a task to do and you give them no room to exercise their own energy, beliefs, approach to the task, it can actually create literal depression because they've got no way to bring themselves to the work. I think you're right to say, who knows, they may have a better way of doing it. Yes, that's one side. You may be foregoing innovation, but you're actually damaging your team, draining energy, probably driving attrition if you delegate to the nth degree each task. So I think there's a lot of value in that. And I love following on from that. If you give them room to have some autonomy in how they do their task, I love the way that you focus on celebration in the accountability, because one thing that Ian's always taught me is we too often go in and say, have you achieved the result? Rather than what progress have you made in the task that was delegated to you? And celebrating the progress and the learning from that progress is far more human, because people can land on results haphazardly. And that doesn't mean that there was any progress in the way they approached their work. You're not giving them affirmation of what they did well, what they could do differently in the future. So I love the engagement and the continuous improvement that this model brings.
It allows for you to be coaching your team and giving feedback in the moment.
Yes.
Rather than the dreaded performance discussion. A performance discussion should be basically a summary of things that you both already know because you have been working through it. One thing you said there, I would quantify and ask the question is, if you think you're stepping too far into what I would say micromanagement, are you delegating or are you prescribing?
Oh,
if you are prescribing, you are definitely micromanaging.
Yeah.
And if you're delegating, are you still giving support to them? And and it doesn't mean telling them everything to do. It could be as simple as asking, how can I help?
Yeah.
Or here's the checkpoints if you want to bounce some things off of me. It's offering up and letting them be a choice. And their choices, you can hold them accountable to.
Yes.
But are you delegating or are you prescribing?
I love that because it makes me think, and what might have to work with Alicia on the show notes and build this as a visual. It makes me think sort of on one end of the spectrum is abdication, delegation somewhere in the sweet spot if you're doing it in the right way and creating that autonomy, and then prescribing is like, no, you went too far. So that's really helpful.
That's part of what I teach in my keynote regarding the A3 methodology is, how do you have presence as a leader and how do you still stay engaged and become a steward of the work rather than a command and control or dictating the work?
Yeah, that's super neat. Well, Andrea, we've covered a lot of ground today. I really love these two frameworks. And the way that you are clearly coaching and helping people to kind of build their scalable and sustainable selves and teams. Just to hit on a couple of highlights, I loved right up front the way that we talked about the three brains and giving you a methodology to kind of, sense check. What are you feeling? Where's that resistance? Get curious and then set that intention. I thought that was really sharp. And I love that it works just as well in face-to-face and interactive meetings as it does in written word. I particularly liked as we moved into this concept of, the MAVEN acronym, the power of visualization. And as we moved into energy management as well, because it gives you a really good way to bring your best self to that moment. And to, captivate others on that journey too. So that was super helpful. And then towards the end here, as we got onto the A3 philosophy, there's something, we've all spent time reading on best practices in performance management, but there is something that is so continuous in the way that you've built that authenticity, autonomy, accountability. To me, at least, going back to your visualization, I can kind of see where I'm at any point in time with a project or an individual. So it's not too complicated. It's right there, and it has some really good essence to it. So I've had a blast. I'm excited to go and try a few of these approaches. And if any of our listeners want to reach out and learn more about your work or the Lavender Farm, how do they find you?
Best place to reach out is one of two. Andrea Wannerstrand at LinkedIn and Andrea W at A3CultureLab.com.
Wonderful. Well, I've really enjoyed the conversation and thank you for making the time to share your great work.
Thank you, Dane. I look forward to hearing how some of the techniques work for you.
Yeah, you bet. We'll follow up.
Just a quick note before we go. The views and opinions shared in this episode are those of our guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the host, Dane Gruneveld, the Leader Group, our patron Huddle 3, or our partners and affiliates. Any scenarios discussed are for the purpose of fueling creative thinking and conversation and should be viewed only in this context. Dane, Leader, our sponsors, partners, and affiliates do not endorse any guest or any organization they may be associated with. It's important to remember that every workplace is as individual as the people within it. Our recommendation is to always seek solutions that are specifically designed to help serve your team's unique needs. And to this point, please know we're here, ready to help you find the best way forward, no matter where your starting point is. You can connect with Dane or myself, Alicia McCraw, on LinkedIn or via the links contained in the show notes. Thanks again for tuning in. And hey, if you think someone in your network would benefit from this episode, feel free to share it or give us a 5-star rating. Those 5 little stars really help us reach more curious people like you. We'll catch you next time on the Future of Teamwork.